Mini episode 854 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everyone, to FDH Lounge mini episode number 854. A real treat today as far as the panel that we have assembled. First of all, myself, FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with two great FDH Lounge dignitaries. Longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, my good friend Steve Callis. Of course, you can also catch him on such fine outlets as the STN.net, SNY in New York, WFAN in New York. And another good friend and a longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, Joe Stazak in Philadelphia. Of course, these guys together, you can catch them weekly, I believe with Tuesday tapings on Callis Remarks, the podcast that they do together. And I have been honored to be on the show with them as a guest previously, as well as Joe, after a scheduling issue here, now back fully restored, 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia, back where he belongs with his time slot there, and it has been a great honor to be on with him there as well. So, Steve, Joe, always a pleasure to get to talk to you guys today talking about the Stanley Cup, but thank you both for being on.
Appreciate it, Rick. Always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure. You too, Steven.
Yeah, great to be on with both of you guys. Looking forward to this.
Well, the subject matter, I must freely admit, as far as the Pittsburgh Penguins winning the Stanley Cup for the second year, becoming the first team to do that since my beloved Detroit Red Wings, so knocking them out as the last team to do that, and just myself being a lifelong denizen of America's North Coast, I have to say I'm really gagging on the subject matter here of the Penguins winning the Stanley Cup, and you know, but that's the thing here. We always keep it real on this show. I certainly always do at all costs. So I'm going to say that. I'm going to put that out there. And I'm going to start in a direction where, again, you know, even for myself, this might be kind of an over-the-top take, a little bit laced with extra bitterness. But that's what I'm feeling. So I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to scratch that itch. I'll start with you, Joe. I know you being out there in Philly, you can't be feeling much better about this than I am. But looking at this here, my overweening sense of cynicism, Game 6, the way that it went there, early third period, Nashville, what would have been, I believe, in the end, we'll never know for sure, but what I think would have been the game-winning goal, erased. The league basically tries to go men in black on us, waving a large device at our heads as if to say, you never saw that. It never happened. We've erased it from history. You know, there's already a lot of cynicism out there, not just myself, about the Penguins being a pet team, Sidney Crosby being a pet player of the league. And again, this is my bitterness that's driving the question here, but I know I'm not the only one. And as far as it goes in that sense, I think we'd all have to agree, Joe, regardless of how much people agree with me on the substance or not, not a good look for the league to have it go down that way.
Awful look, you know, the biggest stage and when the lights are brightest and, you know, a nothing-nothing game. And listen, it happens. And you're talking to someone who can't stand zebras. as a general rule, I'll brush that with the broadest stroke I can find. You know, it was too quick of a whistle. I mean, I get the rule, the whistle stops. It's kind of like the football used to have that, you know, when they couldn't review the fumble if the whistle had blown because technically everyone stops. Well, you shouldn't have blown the whistle that quick. I mean, it was an extremely quick whistle. Colton Scissors, puck was laying right there for him. He scored. There are four. There's an extra official now in the league, and, you know, he's looking at it as well. And it's disappointing that it was a very good series minus a couple lapses, and certainly Game 5 didn't do Nashville any favors. But pretty tight series, pretty intense series, and you know it's going to be a slugfest, especially in Nashville where the Preds were 9-1 heading into that game at home. The only game they had lost was in overtime, and so I was looking forward to, and the league was probably looking forward to, possible Game 7, you know, for all the marbles, for the whole shebang. You know, I'm not sure Pittsburgh and Nashville, the two biggest markets the NHL could find, but it still would have done, you know, some good for the league. And it is, like you said, Rick, it's just a bad look in that kind of situation. It's really, I don't even know what they reviewed, because it's really not a reviewable situation. Once the whistle blows, the whistle blows. I mean, I don't know how they could have overturned that by rule. And it was really disappointing. And I was rooting for Nashville big. You know, not only did I want to see a Game 7, but you think you have a bad Rick and your bitterness and whatnot. If I'm living in Philadelphia, we got to live with those folks from across the state. And I got to hear it every day after they win a game, and a big game, and a Stanley Cup. And they got 5 rings now, and Steelers have 6, and the Pirates have 6. And I don't think we have, you know, 5 combined down here in Philadelphia. So, yeah, it was rough. It was a tough one to swallow, I got to tell you that.
Yet another shared thing for us to bond over, Joe, our shared loathing of all things Pittsburgh. And I have to ask you, Steve, and again, I am dating myself incredibly with this reference here, but the first thing I thought of was, I believe there was a Browns-Oilers wild card game in 88 where it was the same deal. Like, trust us, there was a whistle. I know you thought you saw a fumble, but there was a whistle. So, you know, the phantom whistle. Leagues love to trot this whole thing out. And again, you know, one not need be as cynical as I am, and perhaps Joe is, but again, thoughts on this from a PR standpoint for the league here, Steve, when you've got a team that most people think going in is the one that the league would certainly prefer to have win, and that they feel from a business standpoint generates more income to the league, having it go the way that it did.
Well, I agree. It's a PR disaster, but I have to say, you have to give the people of Nashville credit. I mean, they've really turned it into a hockey town. Not hockey town, but into a hockey town.
Good.
as I was talking to Joe, you know, Nashville was really the 16th seed. They were the first team, they said, since the 1966 Red Wings to come into the playoffs with the least amount of points. And I'm sure you, Rick, as a Red Wings fan, would know back then there were only 6 teams, so the Red Wings came in 4th, won 2 series, and won the Cup.
Yep.
And, of course, you know, that team was loaded. But this team was 16th. They had the least amount of points, and it was just amazing that they made the run. And you can put the run right on Pekka Rinne. And fortunately for Barry Melrose, before the final started, he said, oh, we can give the Conn Smythe to him right now, because the Conn Smythe is for all those playoffs. And then after the first 2 games, where he just was horrifically bad, you know, remember that first game? People already forget that first game. The Penguins didn't get a shot on goal in the second period and 7 minutes of the third. They went 37 minutes with every shot.
Yeah.
Yet they won the first game, and Rene stopped 7 of 11 shots in the first game. He stopped 28 out of 36 in the first 2 games. I mean, it was just a disaster on the road. So you weren't surprised with the 6-0 blowout with respect in you know, the third game in Pittsburgh. But with respect to the call, that rule has been around forever. I never understood it when I was a little kid. I never understand it now. There's literally, with the extra ref, as Joe alluded to, there are literally 16 people on the ice, right? 6 on the side, 2 linesmen, 2 refs.
Yep.
It doesn't matter what the other 15 see. It only matters what the one ref who was in the corner at the time. You know, a lot of times you see the ref when there's something in front. The ref is right behind the goal, and he's pointing to the goal if it goes in. He's pointing to the puck if it's out. It seems to me there has to be some kind of delay, one Mississippi or something. As Joe said, it was a very quick whistle. The ref got hurt a little between periods, but he followed the rule. When he didn't see the puck, he blew the whistle. But he did blow it awful quickly, and I'm not into the conspiracy theory as much, Rick, but I do think something should have been done there. And if you look right after he made the call, the other ref skated up to him, and I think he said, psh, you know, you blew it. Or he probably didn't say that. He probably said the puck came out quickly. But Sessions made a great play to, you know, dive and hit it into the net. Everybody was still playing the way they were going to play. Nothing else was going to change there in terms of, oh, we stopped. He blew the whistle and the puck was in the net, you know, half a second later, if that. So I think, I'm hoping this will make them look at the rule because I think you have to have a small span of time. If it's actually underneath the goalie, or the goalie has it in his glove, it's not going anywhere.
Right.
You know, maybe they're afraid someone's going to try and smack it out. But I've seen this call a number of times in my life, and every time I'm like, man, that's unfair, whether it was for Pittsburgh, who I had picked, or Nashville, who obviously was the long shot underdog favorite playing in Nashville, where Rene had been great, not good. He was horrific in Pittsburgh, but he was great in Nashville throughout the whole playoffs, as Joe said. So I think they have to do something with that rule. It's a terrible optic. I haven't heard really much about it. It's kind of like the tuck rule with Tom Brady. They didn't change that rule for like 10 years after the tuck rule. Everybody, A, forgot there was a tuck rule, and B, forgot that it was still in the league like 10 years later. They eventually eliminated it. But I think it's a similar kind of thing. We're at a minimum now. I think you have to play through the whistle. You know, it's the new world in the NFL as well. You have to play through the whistle, not to the whistle. And I think there should be just a pause of 1 second, even one Mississippi, before he doesn't see it and blows the whistle. And had that been, I think they would have had a good chance to win game six. Obviously, I think Pittsburgh would have won game seven. I don't think Lavalette was going to change goalies to a rookie, and for whatever reason, Rene was just horrific in Pittsburgh. And as you probably know, had never beaten the Penguins until games 3 and 4 in Nashville. Had never beaten them, home or away. So I think it's a sad thing. It's a bad optic. I don't think you can argue that game result was changed, but I don't think you can argue that the series would have gone to Nashville. We can say anything could have happened in the game seven, but I don't think that would have happened in this case.
Well, it would have been uphill. And again, in looking at this, I do think as far as Nashville being the 8th seed in the West, the 16th seed overall, particularly in the West in the last decade, we've had a decent amount of lies, damned lies, and statistics. The LA Kings, the 8th seed, when they won it in 2012,
right,
the first of two cups in 3 years. And then I had mentioned this on our Stanley Cup Final preview. I remember my Red Wings taking a lot of noogies from people, and I think it was 04 and 06, losing to Calgary and Edmonton respectively in the first round. I think retroactively it's not a choke if that team goes on to win the Western Conference. And Nashville in the end, I think the only thing they really did was show that they were a little bit ahead of schedule by the end of the season, because I think when you look at these two teams, when you're projecting 5 years out, clearly of the two teams, I think the future belongs to Nashville. I don't think too many people would really argue that between these teams going forward and into the medium-range future. But what I want to ask about, and I'll start with you, Steve, is I wonder to whatever degree if this series gave us a little bit of an answer on what matters more in the finals, and specifically the deprivation of which, or if it really doesn't, and it's just about the context of what happened. I speak, of course, of Pittsburgh not having Chris Letang in the finals. There was some chatter coming in that if you look back in recent years, if you don't have that superstar on the blue line, how costly that can be, and I kind of bought into that a little bit as I was picking Nashville. But by the same token, in the Western Conference Finals, unfortunately, Ryan Johansson goes down, and you're left with a situation where Victor Arvidsson, Philip Forsberg, the other great young talent that they have there, a little bit more is put on their shoulders at this point. Nashville gets back Mr. Carey Underwood in the finals, but I never thought that was going to account for that much, and it really, really didn't. But Nashville, again, with the superior blue line. So I look at this and I wonder, I mean, it's easy to make too much out of this because Nashville clearly of the two teams had the better blue line. I think depth-wise that would have been the case even if Letang was in there, because when you just start going down the line here, Josi and Subban and some of the other guys in there, and Ellis, and I think ultimately the depth advantage went to Nashville. But is it easy to make too much out of that Pittsburgh loses their superstar on the blue line and they managed to prevail, whereas Nashville couldn't fight through the loss of their superstar center? Or is it just peculiar to the circumstances of this specific matchup, do you think, Steve?
Well, I think it always goes back to goaltending. With respect to what you just said, I'll say this. I agree Nashville had the better blue line. Having said that, this was such a differential in experience between the Penguins, who were not only the Stanley Cup champions, but could throw two Stanley Cup winning goalies. You know, people forget that Marc-Andre Fleury not only won a cup, but he won more games in these playoffs, 9-7. So they had such experience, they had such good goaltending, and as great as Rene was on their way to the finals for Nashville, and he was great, I agree. I wouldn't award him the Conn Smythe Trophy before the finals like Barry Melrose wanted to, but clearly he was the leader. And in rare instances, as you guys probably know, since it's for the whole playoffs, guys who have lost in the finals have won the Conn Smythe Trophy. But I think because of his inability, if he could play remotely well on the road in this series against the Penguins, who, again, he had never beaten before. I think he was 0-7-2 when the final started. I thought that was a bigger key. So, yeah, Letang was a huge loss. But I think Nashville really served notice, and I'm not going to tell you I recognize it because I didn't. Nashville really served notice when they swept the Blackhawks in the first round. That's one of the most shocking results I've seen in hockey in many years. I mean, it was just like there was no way they were going to win. We know number 8 seeds in the NHL, unlike the NBA, can win. We know they can win the Cup because of what you said, Rick, about the Kings. But I don't think anyone expected this. And even after they swept the Blackhawks, even though that should have been a major sign to all of us, it really wasn't. I think they were the underdog in every series that they played. So I think you're right, Rick. The future is brighter. I think Pittsburgh can come back and make a run next year. But as we know, it's very, very hard to win back-to-back, which they just did. It's virtually impossible to win back-to-back-to-back. So it's going to be interesting. But I do think the blue line is important, but I think experience is as important or more important. And at the end of the day, I think the hot goalie is more important than all that. If Rene could have played great in Pittsburgh, I think they could have won the Cup. But I just didn't like them from an experience factor, even though I agree with you they were better. Nashville was better on the blue line with Pittsburgh. And I agree with or without Chris Letang.
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said there. And again, I know I've said this on air previously, and I know it's oversimplifying, but that Nashville-Chicago series, watching those games, I just had the John Cena theme music in my head here. Your time is up, my time is now. That's what it just seemed like. And again, Chicago's time is not done, but what it looked like for four games, they looked shot. They're going to come back next year. We know this. But that at that moment in time, it was really, really striking to watch that happen. And as you were watching it play out, Joe, what were some of your thoughts relative to some of the things that Steve and I have talked about here as far as, again, the injuries on both sides, the experience differential? What were some of the things that you thought were most critical in the final outcome?
I think the thing that I found most critical, I mentioned this to Steve, we talked about it last week, is how clutch Pittsburgh has been this year and last year. I mean, to win a championship, everything has to go right. You have to be relatively free of injuries. You know, you have to get some luck. You have to have hot goaltending, and you have to have timely scoring. And, you know, if you look at some of these swing games, I call them, you know, if it was an election, it would be like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio. You have in game one, like Steve said, Penguins come out and blitz the Preds for 3 goals in 4 minutes and 11 seconds. They don't get another shot for 37 minutes. Meanwhile, in doing so, they give up a 3-goal lead. And then Gensel comes in and from the top of the circle and snaps one past Rene, which was, it was a nice shot. I'll give him that. But it's one you have to make the save in a critical situation. But I'll give the credit to Gensel. I mean, he's played with Crosby most of the year. He had a tremendous, tremendous playoff run in game two, tied going into the third period, and another lapse, three minutes and 18 seconds. You have Gensel scoring, Scott Wilson, Hainsey. It was just at the right time, they came up with what they needed to get the job done. And then you look at real critical times, like in game six, and you have Hornquist scoring with a minute 35 left. You look at last year's Stanley Cup Finals, games one and two, also swing games. You know, Chris Kunitz scores with about 2:35 left in game one, so it doesn't go to overtime. And then Connor Sheary, a rookie, comes up with an overtime goal in game two and putting his team in just a very, very good position. I just think they were extremely clutch when they had to be. They got great goaltending for the most part. I mean, you have two guys. Think about this, and Steve mentioned it. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury has 9 wins, and Matt Murray, who gets injured in warm-ups in game before game one of the playoffs, doesn't play until, you know, after that 9th win was accomplished. And he was tremendous. He was just tremendous. Technically, he's still a rookie. He's 23. I know he won a cup last year, but again, they checked off all the boxes I think you need to make that championship run. And it's hard to do. Steve mentioned it, hard to do 2 years in a row, let alone 3 years in a row. So, and even without Chris Letang, Justin Schultz was hurt before the playoffs. I mentioned Matt Murray, and people thought would didn't give him a chance. So these guys are banged up, especially with Chris Letang, a 12-year veteran defenseman, as good as he is. But they came up with clutch goal after clutch goal. I forgot Ottawa, Game 7, Chris Kunitz in double overtime. I mean, you know, 37 years old, he was hurt before the season even started, didn't know where he was going to end up. And his first two goals of the playoffs came in Game 7. It seemed like everybody took their turn, and at the center of it all was Sidney Crosby. I mean, we haven't even mentioned him yet. We've been talking for about 20 minutes. And that's what I mean. That's how this team wasn't just about Crosby. It was just about everyone, but at the epicenter of this team is Crosby. You know, back-to-back Conn Smythe, you know, he set up that Kunitz goal. I mean, you know, you have to know where he is at all times on the ice. He's so fast. He's got great hands, and he kind of makes the thing go. And Steve mentions this all the time. When he goes down, Malkin becomes Sidney Crosby. You know, Gino plays better, actually, it seems like, when Sidney Crosby is not playing. And he took that major, major hit against the Caps. Considering he missed almost 2 years ago after that hit he took in Winter Classic, I didn't think he'd be coming back, let alone coming back and, you know, took some more hits and more hits. And then he got himself right and went on to win the Conn Smythe. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, you have to tip their cap to what the Penguins did. Like them, hate them, indifferent. You know, they did what they needed to do to win cup number two.
Well, you raised some very interesting points there, Joe, and I want to follow up on that with you. I get your thought on this first here. Something that had been talked about going into the Stanley Cup final when we did the preview show with Russ Cohen, I had mentioned this, that again, and this pains me to say, but do you go back to the conference semifinal and the deal with Washington and Pittsburgh, and well, if Ovechkin can get over the hump and yep, get this win, you know, does it start to even things up? And it pains me to say this, but there would have been a long ways to go to evening things up with Crosby. I said coming into the final that's always been the discussion, right? And it's always been the two guys who came into the league about that time and then the other guy who sort of gets mentioned in the same breath with them, Malkin. I said if Pittsburgh wins in the final, I said not only is Ovechkin out of the one conversation, Ovechkin has to justify that he's had a better career than Malkin. And I'm going to say at this point in time, pains me to say it because I have nothing against Ovechkin, but I'm going to say that he hasn't had a better career than Malkin. What say you, Joe?
That's a good question. And Steve and I talked before the playoffs, and you know my mind has shifted a little bit, but I thought Ovi is probably the best overall player in the league and would give Sidney Crosby a run for his money in terms of the top player in the league, because he plays at both ends, and he's also a very, very physical player. And 50 goals, you don't think you could use a guy, a 50-goal scorer. And the reason I say that is because and we're very in the now around here in Philadelphia, but there was a whole day of programming talking about who the Flyers need, and people were poo-pooing the chance if Ovechkin was available because he can't get his team over the hump. You don't think teams could use a 50-goal scorer like Ovechkin, but, you know, it's tough to call him, you know, a great leader of men when he can't get out of the second round. It just is what it is, and I am the hugest Alexander Ovechkin fan, you know, you might ever find. But I also think when you talk about, if you're going to compare him to Malkin, Malkin is, I wouldn't call him a better player. I think if I had to take two, I would take Ovi. But certainly he's been, you know, he obviously is helped by the his teammate Sidney Crosby, where Ovi is, you know, Batman, where Malkin is Robin, and certainly he becomes Batman when Batman's not around, but I just think that I'd probably go Ovi, even though you're going to look at wins, you're going to look at playoff wins, you're going to look at Stanley Cups, and I know Malkin has three, and Ovi can't get out of the second round, but I think overall, as an overall better player from an individual standpoint, I'll still go Ovi.
Very interesting. And maybe this is going to be my bitterness showing, but gee, maybe what Ovechkin could do is like Kevin Durant. Maybe he could go join the Penguins, huh? Maybe that'll get him his cup.
Yeah, right.
That, I'm sorry, that's my bitterness showing again here on a couple of different levels. So, Steve, how do you see the status rather between these players at this state of their careers?
Wow. I'm a big Ovechkin guy, and Joe and I have talked about it. He's the epitome of a modern-day Gordie Howe hat trick, you know, because he is physical, he'll fight, he does not need protection. He's never had a Malkin, you know, he's never had a Scottie Pippen. So I think it's easy for me to say Ovechkin's a much better hockey player than Malkin, because he is Robin, as Joe said. I've liked him over the years better than Crosby, but Crosby's the best passer in the world. And as great as Gensel was, and Joe and I were talking about maybe they should give the Conn Smythe to him, when you watch all of the finals closely, including the games that Pittsburgh lost, I mean, Crosby set Gensel up in, I think it was game three or four different times for blank shots, and he just couldn't put him in. Missed, when you extrapolate that over the length of the playoffs, Crosby was more the man. I mean, these guys all get better. Clark Gillies is in the Hall of Fame because he played with Trottier, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm not taking anything away from Gensel. He was fantastic. He's a rookie. Put him on the third line in Pittsburgh, he's not scoring like he scored. That was all, not virtually all, I can't say all, Crosby related. As between Crosby and Ovechkin, I think Ovechkin as a hockey player, because again, Crosby needs protection, he's a whiny guy, but you can't question his toughness, as Joe was saying. He came back from that concussion in these playoffs and took a hit into the boards head first with one of his own guys, by the way, also. And I couldn't even believe he got up. Never mind, he kept playing. I thought for sure he had another concussion and he was out. So take nothing away from him. His leadership skills are what they are. Three cups. You know, he's got Olympic gold medals. He's got a World Cup. He's got everything. I think it would be best for Ovechkin and the Capitals for them to part ways. I don't know where the best landing ground is for Ovechkin. But, you know, he's even... People forget this guy averaged like 54, 55 goals his first 5 years in the NHL. Those are Joe DiMaggio numbers in hockey. If you ever want to see a great 5 years, go look at DiMaggio's first 5 years before he went into World War II. But, you know, they can't get anywhere. It's what they can't even get to. They can't win the conference finals. They can't get to a Stanley Cup. I mean, time. I thought maybe it was the coach for a while. Now you can't blame the coaches. And he did, what I'm saying is he subjugated his game. I'm not going to say he's like Earl Monroe with the Knicks, but he subjugated his game where they wanted him to play more defense and not score as much. And he willingly did that and, you know, only scored 50 goals a year instead of 65 in his third year, for example. So his goal scoring numbers are... I never really saw Rocket Richard play, but Rocket Richard was like the crazy guy who could score goals at all times and was the greatest goal scorer of his generation. Ovechkin, to me, is kind of like a Rocket Richard. You know, everybody in Canada is screaming now if they hear this. I also think there's always been a bit of a anti-Russian sentiment. It's not like it was in the late 80s. It's not like it was after the 72 series and the Olympics and the 80 and all those series when the Russians came over. And I thought changed the game. You know, that famous 72 NHL Russia series where the question was, is the NHL going to sweep or are they going to lose a game? And then they almost lost the series. And Paul Henderson is like a national hero. And I think he might be in the Hall of Fame because of that one goal. You know, I call him the Bill Mazeroski of hockey. But I think, and, you know, Don Cherry was very clear about his anti-Russian stance. And, you know, and Bobby Clark broke Kharlamov. So I think it was Kharlamov or Mikhail
Frankel.
Yeah, and that 72 series, I watched Kharlamov and Mikhailov play, and I was like, who are these guys? They're two of the greatest players I've ever seen. And, you know, Phil Esposito was quoted later as saying, I wish you would have done it sooner, you know. So you have that anti-Russian, and back in the 70s and 80s, although maybe it's going to increase now because of what's going on, the anti-Russian sentiment was incredibly high, and when those first Russians came over, it was incredibly tough for them. So I think like a guy like a Don Cherry, who has made no bones about the fact he's essentially anti-Russian, maybe he's changed nowadays, but I think Ovechkin overcame a lot. I think he needs a different team. I think as an individual hockey player, as opposed to a leader and winner, I would still pick him better than Crosby, but you have to give it to Crosby. He's 1-3. He's a tough, tough guy, and I don't mean fighting. He's not that. But, you know, the whole thing with Subban was kind of half a joke. I thought I was disappointed. Yeah. A lot of people liked that. I was disappointed on both sides, Subban and the Listerine. maybe that's funny. I like what Crosby said about that. You know, he just likes attention. I never said that to, you know, he's full of baloney. And then the guy brings Listerine to the playoffs. I don't really like those side things myself. A lot of people do like it. But, you know, all credit to Crosby because he's clearly the best leader winner of this generation.
He's had a tremendous career. I mean, I can't take that away from him, much as I would like to. And again, excellent points on the comparisons. Excellent points from both of you guys on that, to be sure. So, in terms of any other closing thoughts on this year's Stanley Cup Final, I'll start with you, Steve. Anything we didn't get to? Any additional thoughts you have?
A couple of closing thoughts. The Neil for Hornquist trade looked like it was totally pro-Nashville. Neil played very well in the playoffs. Hornquist played okay, but he scored the biggest semi-freakish goal of the playoffs, obviously, the first goal the first goal that counted, Rick,
yeah.
In game six of the playoffs. It was kind of a freaky off the net, off the back, and then I thought Rene made a goaltending mistake, because generally speaking, when the puck is behind the net, you're taught as a goalie to literally be in the net.
You know,
you're only your pad and your stick is outside, not your back.
Right.
So I think that cost him. I think that was a huge mistake. He stood on his head, Rene, though. Every game in Nashville, he was great.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I would say, I always find it interesting. The handshakes are great. I like all that stuff, and it's the coolest thing, I think. But I also always like to see, who do they give the Stanley Cup to first after Crosby gets it? There's always a guy. I thought it might have been Cullen, because he's 40 years old. He might be retiring. But I didn't realize that they gave it to Hainsey first, who played very well. But I didn't realize, I knew he'd been in the league a long time, but not only has he been in the league since 2002, 2003, he had never even been in the playoffs, which I did not know. So for a guy to be in the league 14, 15 years, play very well, shot-blocking machine, I thought it was very fitting. You know, that must be great conversations those guys have as to who are we going to give it to first, because it's a great honor after the captain gets it. And he was the one to get it, and I thought deservedly so.
In terms of who got it, I'll be perfectly blunt with you. First, I'm hearing of this. I'm not going to subject myself to watching that, to be honest with you. So I'm glad I got you to tell me how it went, Steve. I boycotted that. I was not going to bother with that, so to speak, here. Joe, how about you? Any other closing thoughts on the final?
As much as I don't like Pittsburgh, I just have to tip my cap. I mean, they are entertaining to watch, and they've certainly built their team. How you build a team, you have to be bad to get good, and they've been very fortunate to come around at a time where Mario Lemieux was coming out back in 84, and, you know, Lou Angotti, former captain of the Philadelphia Flyers, was the coach at that point. Eddie Johnstone was the GM, and I think they ended up with 37 points. I mean, you talk about Sam Hinkie and tanking a season. That's exactly what they did to land Mario, and then the Flyers take Mike Ricci, and Yarmo Yager goes there, and then, you know, fast forward about 15 years, Malkin's there on the board for the number one pick in 04, and of course, they're still bad, and then Crosby comes around, and then they build their team around him. And it's like you said, it's very tough to sustain and to win two cups in a row, let alone three. But Jim Rutherford's done a great job of just bringing guys up from Muskegon and his other minor league affiliates, and low income guys, I call them, guys that don't make a lot of money right now, but they've been able to step up. They've been handpicked, and they've done a tremendous, tremendous job coming up with big goals at big times in big games, and they are something to watch. And I think that they are, you have to call them almost the gold standard now. No pun on their colors, but from what they've done, from the adversity they faced, and they're heading into the playoffs. Most people didn't give them a shot because of all the injuries, and it shows what, you know, a complete team effort can do for you, even when you lose a guy like such a great defenseman like Chris Letang, and you lose your top goaltender seconds before the playoffs begin, and Justin Schultz was out, they had a few more injuries, and just what they did. Crosby was out a little bit in the Washington series, then they came back and won the next game. I mean, they just seemed to come up with big moments, that team, and that's what you have to do to build a Stanley Cup winning organization. And Mario Lemieux is saving the franchise. He's got his name on the cup now five times. It seems like everything he touches, turns to gold, and he's done a nice job. I just think the organization is the gold standard in the league right now.
Yeah, they really
are. If I can say,
yeah. If
I could say one more thing, Rick, we would be remiss, I think, not to mention the coaches. Peter Laviolette did a tremendous job with Nashville. He already won his cup with Carolina. He took the Flyers to the cup finals. He has a way of doing it. He even made the Islanders good, although he didn't get them to the cup finals. That's from a Ranger fan, of course. But and also Mike Sullivan, only the second guy to win two Stanley Cups in his first 2 years. As you know, he came in the middle of last year, and you got to give them both a lot of credit. The only other coach, and I'll just mention this because I think this guy's the greatest coach ever and people have forgotten about him, Toe Blake with the Canadiens, won 8 Stanley Cups, but in fact he's the Casey Stengel of hockey. He won 5 Stanley Cups in a row his first 5 years with Montreal. Now, as you know, Montreal was a dynasty back then in the late 50s, early 60s. Rocket Richard, Jean Beliveau, Doug Harvey, et cetera, et cetera. But I just wanted to mention them because I think if we do the NBA analysis, we may not mention the coaches except to say, 23 guys could have coached those two teams. But that's for later.
Yeah, well, I will just say, my closing thoughts on this here that again, this does nothing but ramp up my bitterness that this franchise was supposed to move to Kansas City in 2005. It was supposed to happen. Pittsburgh was going to lose this team. That just galls me no end that they didn't have their Art Modell moment. It was supposed to happen. But, such is life, I suppose. And, again, here's a little bit of foreshadowing about the next FDH Lounge mini-episode. My bitterness about the NBA Finals only exceeds what happened with the Stanley Cup Final. But nevertheless, an entertaining breakdown with the both of you. Steve Callis and Joe Stazak, my good friends, FDH Lounge dignitaries. And, of course, you can catch their excellent podcast, Callis Remarks, every week on Sportsology Radio. And also Joe on 97.5, The Fanatic in Philadelphia. Thank you both for being a part of a great Stanley Cup Final wrap-up, gentlemen.
Rick, always a pleasure, my friend. You too, Steven. It was great. Thanks, fellas.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys, for being a part of this. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 854.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.